Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, g'day, blokes and sheilas. How we going?
Still filling in here for Bob Kincaid, who might even make an appearance tonight. I think he's in transit on the way home from D.C. Hopefully coming back with a bit of a report on these hearings over mountaintop removal. And we're going to talk about the climate bill and a few other things today. And being that it's Friday, today is the big front porch, which means it's all for you guys. Y'all bring to the table anything you want to bring up. We'll talk about this climate bill a little bit here, and then the floor is open. We'll just go nuts. It's Friday, so let's just have a mad conversation. And I promise, no Michael Jackson stuff. We got a bit silly yesterday. That's going to happen. Oh, it's a chilly Saturday morning here in beautiful Central Coast, New South Wales, Australia. And you just can't complain about living here. But I've said before that the parallels in politics between Australia and the United States are sometimes just undeniable. And, you know, some of the same complaints about the climate bill that Kevin Rudd's been putting in over here or attempting to, you can hear the same gripes over there on both sides. And boy, I'm glad that the United States is getting ready to do something, but as usual, there's a bit too much, giving to coal. And here, you know, and here, a great example, you know, I'm at the Huffington Post and I'm seeing an ad for clean coal, which I just find really, 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 really disgusting. Now, whether that's a Google ad or not, and it's pulling off of keywords, I don't know, but, you know, anyone that listens to this network or actually does any research, does any reading, understands that the concept of clean coal is just that. It's a concept. It's a term of spin. It doesn't exist yet. No one has ever been able to show a system actually running. And the idea that you can remove carbon from something that is 100% carbon is asinine. And not only that, this carbon sequestration idea, it's insane. You know, we should just leave all that ancient sunlight, all that carbon in the ground. I mean, the amount of stored carbon that was built up over millennia in the planet has been released. In, you know, a little over 100 years. But, You know, the coal industry is a mafia. There's no other way to describe them. They're a mafia. And it's just amazing the stranglehold that they have on politicians and on the minds of their workers, which is so unfortunate because, you know, a real, real move towards renewable energy could create just a huge amount of new jobs, clean jobs, safer jobs. You know, retrain the people that work in coal mines and those that are blowing the mountains off of mountaintops. As, you know, politicians continue to look at this as a local issue, and it's not. It's not a local issue. It's a national issue, and even more than that, it's a global issue. Now, you know, I hear, you know, the unfortunately, I can't even get to the page for the climate bill. It's failing to load due to unusually high number of visitors. I'm going to try this again. Nope, nada. But, you know, and I've been reading a few pieces on it today, and you know, Barack Obama and the Democrats are having to go and push this thing on a jobs level about job creation because they can't actually talk about the science. I mean, this is one of the things that so frustrates me about, logic, education, respect for science, that we just can't talk about this issue the way that it needs to be talked about. Yes, jobs will be created, a whole new economy. I mean, this has happened before in history. I mean, you look at the railroads. You know, the government made that happen, and it created a whole new private industry. But we just can't actually, I just find it tragic that we can't actually have this discussion on the facts, on the science that best supports it. And we have to go, you know, round around a rosy, you know, dancing around the bush to try and get at it sideways. Now, I'm seeing reported here from the AP that House Democrats have won a test vote on the climate bill. It says here, House Democrats narrowly won a key test vote Friday on sweeping legislation to combat global warming and usher in a new era of clean energy. Republicans said the bill included the largest tax increase in American history. You know, everything with these sons of bitches comes down to taxes, taxes, taxes! You know, it's a short-sighted nonsense. I mean, a little later I'm going to have to get into something that which Ben Birch has brought to my attention, some really horrible stuff that's going on in Chicago. And that issue, again, comes down to this thing that no one wants to pay for anything. And as Nanette says in the chat room, the climate bill leaves big giveaways to coal, which is just insane. Why do we continue to give money to an industry that makes shitloads? I mean, can you, you know, if I get tied up in knots on this just because of the frustration. I mean, I've been on this issue for so many years now, and the science is so kind of dead set on what's going on. Now, as I understand it, the Waxman bill you know, has investment for renewable energy, not nearly enough. But then, you know, you're setting up a cap-and-trade system which has its supporters and its detractors. I think if done right, which is the big thing, if done right, it could have a very positive effect. The trade part I have problems with, but the caps I have no problem with. And I think it should actually just be a tax on carbon. You know, you're an energy producer. The carbon that you put out, you should have to pay for. And that income goes to support new renewable energy, helps to defer some of the cost to the public. Because, yes, initially there will be some increase, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be small. The Republicans go off on the $770 a year figure, which is just really a stretch. However, now if I can find the right tab here, not that one. This one, I think. Cossack sent me this. This is really good. From the Charleston Gazette on Shelley Moore camel toe and denial on the climate change bill. This was obviously from yesterday before the test vote was taken. It says, over in Washington, the House of Representatives is getting ready to vote tomorrow on a big Waxman-Markey climate change bill, the American Clean Energy and Security Act. House Democrat leaders are busy trying to round up enough votes to get the bill approved, and they're having to round up Democrats. And Al Gore and Obama are kind of doing a tag team on progressives trying to get them to support this thing. Now, the bill is far from perfect, but at this point, I'll actually kind of take it. Because I think if any action is put off for another year, they're going to be able to dilute it more and more, dilute it more and more. I'd rather see the act get in and have them be able to tweak it and make it stronger as time goes on. I could be misguided here. But the article continues. It says, here in West Virginia, Democratic reps Nick J. Rahal and Alan Moulihan are not saying yet how they will vote, but they update here. Moulihan has announced he will vote against the bill. But it's pretty clear from the start what our other member of Congress, Representative Republican Shelley Moore Cameltoe, was going to do, and she made it even more clear yesterday. This bill amounts to a national energy tax on consumers, a tax on business, and a tax that we can't afford. In a state that gets 98% of its electricity from coal and employs thousands of miners, a bill that penalizes domestic energy isn't a valid option. There's a twist. She's twisting it. A bill that penalizes domestic energy. No, it's penalizing dirty, 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 dirty coal. And in some way, shape, or form is trying to actually promote other clean, renewable, and environmentally friendly sources of domestic energy. I mean, the dishonesty that comes out of these people just blows me away. She continues, this bill essentially pits states like West Virginia against states like California and Massachusetts, and that's not the right approach. West Virginians shouldn't have to subsidize our friends on the coast, particularly when other options are available. Well, you want to talk about subsidies? Shit. California, even with its economic problems that it's having right now, in the overall economy, subsidizes a whole lot of the rest of the United States. West Virginia's subsidizing nothing. I will continue to argue that the bipartisan plan I recently introduced provides an opportunity to invest in renewable energy technology, invest in conservation, invest in, here it goes, clean coal. All without taxing consumers. See, here it always goes back to the same damn thing. Tax, 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 fear the tax, fear the tax. And this is the short-sighted crap. Because I'm going to get to actually how by 2020, this should probably end up bringing energy costs down for consumers. Pay a little now, save a bunch later.
Save a little now. Pay a little now. Save a whole bunch later. For the rest of eternity.
Dumbass! You stupid, and I won't use the word I'd like to use. It's a little bit more accepted here in Australia. But they continue on to say, what's more interesting is what Representative Cameltoe didn't say. For example, according to a Congressional Budget Office analysis, as reported by Climate Progress and Paul Krugman of the New York Times, the legislation would cost the American an American household just 18 cents a day, about 65 bucks a year. Okay? Not hard. Not hard. No, Nanette, I won't use it because it's a violent word to women in the United States. I won't use it. Says Krugman, who has a Nobel Prize in economics, unlike Ms. Cameltoe, the point is that we need to be clear about who are the realists and who are the fantasists here. I actually love this statement from Krugman. The realists are actually the climate activists who understand that if you give people in a market economy the right incentives, they will make big changes in their energy use and environmental impact. The fantasists are the burn baby burn crowd who hate the idea of using government for good and therefore insist that doing the right thing is economically impossible. And according to an EPA review of the legislation, efficiency provisions of the bill would lower, not increase, electric bills over the next decade. From the EPA, as a result of energy efficiency measures, consumer spending on utility bills would be roughly 7% lower in 2020 as a result of legislation. The overall impact on the average household, including the benefit of many of the energy efficiency provisions in the legislation, would be 22 to 30 cents per day, 80 to 111 bucks a year. That's savings. Just a decade down the road. So if it's gonna cost you 18 cents a day now to save 30 cents a day later, I kind of see that as working out in the people's benefit, okay? And that's not even the point of this whole exercise. The point of this whole exercise is to stop shitting in our own nest, for Christ's sakes. Which is what we've been doing since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And I've said it before. The Industrial Revolution, at this point, has been an abject failure. Because of all the gains of it, at what cost? This piece from the Gazette continues. As NASA climate scientist James Hansen made clear during his visit to West Virginia this week, coal is the planet's biggest source of carbon dioxide, the key greenhouse gas. If nothing is done about coal's greenhouse gas emissions, well, there's no way to deal with the problem without addressing coal. Wrote Hansen, the science is clear. Burning all fossil fuels will destroy the future of young people and the unborn. And the fossil fuel that we must stop burning is coal. Coal is the critical issue. Coal is the main cause of climate change. It is also the dirtiest fossil fuel. Air pollution, arsenic, and mercury from coal have a devastating effect on human health and cause birth defects. It also lowers the IQ of people exposed to it. All you have to do is look at the way the pro-coal dickheads acted in West Virginia. They just showed how unbelievably ignorant they are, and the fact that they cannot comprehend the idiocy of what they're supporting is just proof of the damage that's done to their brains. Joseph Rahm outlines on Climate Progress that he thinks the current bill is going to be pretty tough on the coal industry. The EPA projects, and this is on page 27 of the report that I can't get at, that the bill will stop pretty much all of the few remaining new dirty coal plants that the EIA had been projecting would be built through 2025. Whereas the overwhelming major new capacity will be renewable energy. And the EPA projects the bill will lead to 22 gigawatts of extra coal retirements by 2015, beyond what EIA had been projecting. So, okay, you know, the bill's not perfect, but these are good signs, okay? If this thing goes through, we'll start having the dirtiest of the plants go offline. Like I said, this thing ain't perfect, but it's far better than anything that's been proposed, because nothing's been proposed before. But it's mad. It's just absolutely mad. Just seeing my email, Gene sent me another piece. Milband, 2020 is a year of no return for emissions. Well, I mean, we've already kicked over the tipping point of actually having changes in the climate. That's already been happening. I mean, you can see it. And these people that still go around saying, yeah, but it's gotten cooler over the last decade, that's bullshit. I don't even know where they come up with this. Because it's just patently not true. And, you know, I've said this before. Some people complain about the term climate change as opposed to global warming. Because climate change was originally put out by deniers as a way to try and make it seem less scary. However, the term actually has merit, because global warming is an overall warming of the planet. But when you warm up the planet, you end up with a changing climate. And the thing that's happening here, and this is, you know, when I get into discussions with people about, it's all nonsense. I said, look, how come we had a wetter year here in Northern Australia than we had in the last five? Well, I'll tell you why. As you pump more of these greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, you're creating more potential energy in the entire atmosphere. Now, this wonderful little system that is our planet is constantly trying to get to equilibrium, where it tries to get to an even temperature all around the planet, but it's impossible because you have this thing spinning, you know, and as the planet rotates and you know, the position of the sun changes in respect to us. The side that faces the sun warms, and the side that's facing away cools, which creates all kinds of disturbance. But because you have more total potential energy in the atmosphere, you're going to have worse extremes of both hot, cold, dry, and hot. Or dry and wet, rather. I mean, we're seeing this here in Australia, where what used to be the growing areas for crops here is moving. And places that have been historically dry anyway are getting drier. And the places, some of the places like, Queensland the last few years, I mean, they normally, you know, up in the tropical north of Queensland, you know, has monsoon season. But they're getting just absolutely doused outside of monsoon season. And I mean, there are communities that have been completely devastated by flood 2 and 3 and 4 times in the last couple of years. It's absolutely frightening stuff. Now, I've got some audio here. And that'd be that one. Over here, over at YouTube, there's a little bit of audio. Holt and Waxman talk about energy research and development. Here you go.
Guys, for 1 minute.
Madam Speaker, I thank the chair. Energy, climate, and environment are principal subjects that I've spoken about and worked on for decades, since before I came to Congress and since. And to work on these issues, I believe, is a principal reason my constituents sent me to Congress. I admire the chairman's skill in assembling a bill, and I fully support the chairman's efforts to reduce the release of greenhouse gases. However, I'm deeply concerned that the bill does not include the research funding necessary to reach the target of 80% emission reduction set in the bill. We must transform the way we produce and use energy. We cannot meet this goal with today's technology, and this bill as written, will not provide the billions of dollars needed to find and develop the future technology. So I'm here to ask the chairman of the committee if I may have his assurances that he will work with me to increase the amount of research and development funding in this bill and other legislation that we need in order to reduce our reliance on foreign fuels and to slow the rate of growth of climate change.
I thank the gentleman for his comments. There is much in this bill to promote research and to bring about necessary innovation. I yield myself another 10 seconds. However, I agree that we need billions more in research and development funding into new innovative ways to produce and use energy. I pledge to work with you to provide additional funding for energy research and development in this bill as this bill moves forward.
Thomas, time has expired. The gentleman.
I thank the
Texas.
Gentleman.
I want to yield.
Okay, here, talking about the real point here. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, a little bit of medicine really isn't enough. I mean, this should really be, you know, Al Franken actually had a term way back when he was still doing radio, where he said, you know, we should really be doing this like, you know, we should be handling this like the Apollo Moon Project, you know. You know, when Kennedy said, you know, by the end of the decade, man will be on the moon. Well, you know, if we had that same kind of dedication and that same kind of focus to actually make this like an Apollo project and say in the next 10 years, we're going to try and get, say, half of the coal burning power plants offline and replace them. And as you all know, one of the best alternatives is out there. It's doable now. It's getting better all the time. Solar geothermal. And if you want to read up on it, just Google search SHPEGS, SHPEGS. It's the acronym for it. And you'll be able to see this amazing system that Spain's had one running for a few years now, and there's a couple of others around the planet. I believe that there is one going up in California. And basically what this is, after construction, it has a zero carbon footprint. Did you hear that? Zero. No carbon after construction. Because obviously the construction, you know, you have to run machinery and things like that. You know, as Tom Hartman said so beautifully in The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, we need to use the dirty energy that we have at the moment and use it to build the power generation of the future. Now, solar geothermal, really simple. This is the other thing. It's really simple. Unlike the concept that is clean coal, this is simple. A whole bunch of rheostats, in other words, curved mirrors, in an array, focus on a huge concrete tower that is filled with amorphous ammonia. It is heated to very high temperatures and runs good old-fashioned steam turbines. The excess pressure is then stored in tanks, so when the sun goes down, you reverse the cycle and you have base load power. And Cossack says, you know, Australia should be seriously looking at solar and wave generation. We are, not as seriously as I like. Kevin Rudd's climate bill that he's trying to pass is absolutely pussy-ass wimpy. And for a guy that got basically put over the line to get elected by the Greens, I am really, really, really pissed off with him on this one. He set like this paltry 5% reduction thing by like 2020. It's a joke. It's an absolute joke. You know, and another example of, you know, wind power, that's not dependable. Well, shit. I think it's Holland has been producing so much wind power that they're exporting it to other countries. I mean, come on. How long do we have to have these absolutely nonsensical arguments with people that don't even want to read? I mean, I think this is really the problem, you know. A member of my family whose name shall not be mentioned, you know, goes off about, you know, all this climate change stuff is bullshit. And I said, how do you know? And Glenn Beck told me. Have you read anything? Well, you know, I don't like to read. Well, don't expect to have a conversation with me, a debate about a subject with me, that you haven't read anything about. I told him, I said, look, I'll send you stuff on this solar geothermal system. And you should check it out. You'll see that this is very viable, not expensive to produce. And then you should push your local legislators. And he's like, well, don't send me too much to read. And I said, well, fuck. You want to have a debate and not even read anything? I mean, really, we're having to debate people that actually, you know, it's so easy to deny something and argue against something when you actually don't know what the hell you're talking about. It's absolutely incredible. I feel like I need to take a little break. It's hard to get this worked up at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to get this little track to play here. Hopefully Windows Media Player seems to be playing nicer than it did yesterday. That was just ridiculous yesterday. Come on, computer. Come on, computer. But, you know, I am so of two minds on this bill. I know it's not perfect. I know it doesn't go far enough. But hell, we haven't done anything yet. You know, Greenpeace has come out flat out against it, which I understand. Greenpeace leads the way in many ways on environmental issues, and they're of course going to be pushing for the strongest legislation. And I have no doubts that what they'd propose would probably be the best thing we could have. But I just don't know if in this, at the moment, without actually getting started and showing some benefit, that, you know, we have any choice. So, you know, I just don't know. Like I said, what other kind of choice we have at the moment, and hope that by Cossack. I don't need no book learning. Everything I need to know, I hear from O'Lally Beck and the Savage Wiener. Cossack. You're all over it, friend. You're all over it. Because this is just ridiculous that we continue to have arguments with uneducated people. And then you go and say that to their face and go, you're just an elitist. Well, if an elitist means that I actually know what the fuck I'm talking about, then I'm an elitist, baby. Choke on it. That's how I feel. All right. We're going to take a quick little break here and go with a little Jim White again. This is a song called The Girl from Brownsville, Texas. And if you don't have Jim White in your collection yet, you're missing out. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, your guest host John Fox here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. We'll be back in a few minutes to take your calls. It's the front porch, baby.
You ain't no friend of mine. It's late at night. motel rooms drunk. I've been listening to lonesome men cry. My best friend once said, Jim, what you cling to? That thing that you had best forget. That I ain't, 'cause I but that girl, oh Lord, that girl from Brownsville, Texas.
Jim White, and it's from an album from 2004 called Drill a Hole in That Substrate and Tell Me What You See. I recommend Mr. White highly. Some of the most enjoyable stuff that, actually that's Gail's discovery. She discovered him, you might be familiar with an English band called Morcheeba. And they've done some production for Jim. And it's one of those things, ooh, I really like Morcheeba. What's this guy like? And just some really, really amazing stuff. He's a reformed Southern Christian and writes some just really amazing lyrics, some beautiful music, some really funky, weird music, too, at times. But he's an amazing guy. People are asking, yeah, Bob Kincaid will be back live on Monday. We might actually hear from him tonight. He's on his way back from D.C. at the moment. And I'm hoping that he's going to pop in and give a ring so he can tell us what was going on in D.C. because they've been down there for the mountaintop removal hearings down there in D.C. And down there, I say that like I still live in New Jersey. It's like up, way up there from here because I'm, you know, Bob says he's from the South. I'm from the deep, deep damn South, man. The Southern Hemisphere. I haven't had a chance to read this yet, but we'll check it out. From The Independent, there's a great Milband article here. 2020 is the year of no return for emissions. Now, see, this is what we're facing here. You know, this whole climate change legislation thing, you know, we've been putting this off and putting this off and putting this off and playing denial nonsense games for years. And we're kind of at that moment, you know, we better get with the program and quick. The article is by Mike McCarthy, and he's referencing Milband, a politician in the U.K., the world's emissions of greenhouse gases causing global warming should peak in 2020 and then start to decline, the British government is proposing in a run-up to the Global Climate Conference taking place in Copenhagen in December. Emissions from developed nations such as Britain and the U.S. should reach their highest point even earlier by 2015. The Energy and Climate Change Secretary, Ed Miliband, suggested to other countries in a meeting in Mexico this week, the first move to make crucial issue of carbon peak an official target of the Copenhagen Agreement. Emissions of gases such as carbon dioxide have been rising at far faster rate than was predicted even a decade ago, and research published by the UK Met Office last year showed that the point at which they began to decline as a whole is absolutely vital in bringing a rising temperatures under control. So I guess what they're saying is, like, we gotta peak no later than 2015, 2020, or else we're in real deep caca. A few years' delay in the peak can mean the world is committed to a significantly higher rise than otherwise would be the case. And computer simulations by the Met Office Hadley Center indicate that for every 10 years the peak is postponed, another half degree of temperature increase becomes unavoidable. Hitherto, the issue of the global peak has largely remained a theoretical one. But this week, Mr. Miliband and British officials put it on the table at a meeting in Mexico of the Major Economics Forum on Climate and Energy, a new pre-Copenhagen high-level discussion group which has been convened by U.S. President Barack Obama. The MEF meetings will culminate in a world leaders summit on climate change, which will take place alongside the G8 meeting in Italy in July, and which will be a critical moment in the push towards a Copenhagen climate deal. Yesterday, Mr. Miliband said that the issue of global peak in emissions has so far been significantly underemphasized, If it could be agreed, it would irreversibly break the trend towards rising emissions, he said, adding it would show that something had changed. We are arguing very strongly for a 2020 global peak. Dr. Vicky Pope, the Hadley Center's head of climate change advice, said yesterday, even if emissions peak in the next 10 years and then decline rapidly, temperatures are still likely to rise around 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels by the end of the century. Every 10-year delay in starting reductions will result in a further half a degree increase in the most likely temperature rise, so the need for action is urgent. Now, you got to remember, this is 2 degrees centigrade. It's a little bit higher than if you're calculating in Fahrenheit. You know, that old math, I was talking about that. America's so slow to change. You know, arguing for climate change with a nation that still uses feet, yards, pounds, ounces. Come on, let's get base 10 here, folks. Talk about putting kids on a back foot. Sorry. All countries, including the UK, must be ambitious in commitments to cut greenhouse gases, Mr. Milben said, ahead of the launch today of the government's own manifesto on what needs to be achieved in Copenhagen. Greater public pressure would play a part in ensuring the politics of negotiating a new deal catches up with the science of what needs to be done. See, the science, the science, the science, the science, the science. And thank you, Gene. 2 degrees Celsius is 5 degrees Fahrenheit. Thank you very much, Mr. News Ninja. I'd be lost without you, my friend. from today, the government is distributing pamphlets setting out the importance of Copenhagen, which will be sent to public bodies such as schools and hospitals and launching a website. And watch, the deniers are going to be sitting around, they're putting out left-wing propaganda in the schools. Yeah, science is now propaganda. Whole thing is just absolutely outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. I'm kind of a purist when it comes to what needs to be done. But I understand in this world of uneducated people that seem to have louder voices than they deserve. A minority. See, this is the other thing. There was just a poll the other day in the United States. Something like 2/3 of Americans say that greenhouse gases need to be regulated by the government. Okay? That's 2/3. That's a majority last time I frickin' checked. So if a majority of the people support this, why are we struggling to get an overall majority to back real legislation to combat the issue? Why? All comes down to corporate interests. And I also think there's this underlying purity that some people feel about themselves. There's nothing that I'm doing that could possibly be affecting anybody else. And how dare you tell me that I can't drive my SUV like a dumbass when I don't need to and have one in the city that'll never go off-road because I don't have a damn farm or nothing. But it sure makes my penis feel bigger. You know, the idea that what we actually do in our day-to-day lives doesn't have an effect on others is insane. It's madness, I tell you, madness. And if you want to check out more on what the UK government is up to with this peak concept, check out www.actoncopenhagen.gov.uk. That's actoncopenhagen.gov.uk, and you can actually see what they're all on about. And I mean, a great example of the stupidity of the uneducated And I'll just hit on this before we go and take the break for the top of the hour, and then we'll open up the phone line so we can kick out to the front porch, you know. Bring the beer. If you got 'em, smoke 'em. I won't tell. Joe, I'm not a plumber, Wurzelbacher. Suggest lynching Chris Dodd. I mean, what stupid crap comes out of this guy's mouth? But and this cracks me up. Moron. I mean, this is the mentality of the people that deny things like climate change. He says here, I'm here for one reason and one reason only. I love America. Wurzelbacher told the crowd. Mainstream media wants to paint us as a bunch of extremist rat. A bunch of extremists, rat? We're in search of liberty and our freedoms. So, what's so extreme about that? Let me give you another extremist view. In God we trust. He said to wild applause. Yeah, throwing meat at the frickin' idiots. Say that too loud in some parts of America and you'll be shot. It's terrible. Excuse me? Excuse me? Who's shooting who? Right-wing idiots, morons, extremists, shooting doctors. Going and shooting up Holocaust museums. I mean, in God we trust, for Christ's sake, man, wake up. How about in science we trust? In science we research? I mean, to use a non-existent God, or if you believe your particular God over someone else's God. See, in my mind, religion is racist. You hear that? Religion is racist. Every religion calls themselves as being their people are better than all the other people. I know that's a wild concept. And I know that is going to upset some people. And those that have real honest faith that does something good for their lives, this is not directed at you. But these people that feel like there is only one true faith, you know, whether it's Christianity, and those that feel they gotta convert everybody, you know, and baptize people after death, how can you have a real discussion with people like this, when they can't even get it together to deal with the world in that we actually live in, not one that was fabricated by people, you know, a long time ago. We've learned a lot since then. I can kind of understand some of it going way, way back when we had less of an understanding of the world around us. Tragic. And we're going to blindly go into a burned up hole. Oy. Just frightening. Just frightening. All right, folks. We're going to take a break here, go to the top of the hour, and from there, I'd like to hear from you folks. What you got going today? I have a subject at some point that I have to hit on today for Ben Birch. I missed on this yesterday. Illinois is killing children. If you were listening to Hartman yesterday, he did cover this. And this is just some really, really tragic stuff. I'll try and get some of those details up during the break. We'll talk about that. Maybe if Ben's around, maybe I can get him on the phone because he's directly involved in what's going on there, and he would be really good to hear from. So, with that, I have to play this, because it'll just kind of calm me down. I play it all the time, and on my show, it gets played once a show, because if there's anything I can kind of put out there into the ether, it's the concept of being human. Michael Ferranti and Spearhead, Stay Human. You're listening to the Head On with Bob Kincaid with your guest host, John Fox. You're on the Head On Radio Network, America's Liberal Voice. We'll see you after the break.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, a rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow. Bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert. Dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Full of life like a man going to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning. Morning. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bop. Can I hear it once again? Boom bop. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bop. Can I hear it once again? Boom bop. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Go for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and you're underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim and not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system. To legalize you or give you your freedom. You want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bop. Can I hear it once again? Boom bop. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bop. But can I hear it once again? Boom bop. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We saw the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns or still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by banging Tuscarosa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in the stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world.
stay human.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
That is such a great bit of guitar. I never tire of that. Welcome back, everybody. Hour two here of Head-On with Bob Kincaid. Your guest host, John Funk, here. To get back some links that Ben sent me over this budget thing that's going on in Illinois. Now, I know that Hartman covered this yesterday. Good on him. It's good, man. Oh, by the way, a big shout out. I won't mention the name, but the wondrous donor that dumped a nice wad on White Rose yesterday. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I can't say it enough. Thank you. I hope you're listening. And Ben's running a little deal where, 20% of donations to the horn to White Rose comes to the horn. So, thank you very much. I mean, White Rose, the horn, we'd all be hurting without folks like you. It wasn't $10. That's all I can say. It wasn't $10. but Ben sent me an email yesterday saying Illinois plans to murder children. On July 1st, the state budget takes effect. This eliminates 100% of all funding for many social service programs, plunging Illinois to dead last in social service spending behind all other states and D.C. And here in Elgin, it closes Little Angels, which houses and cares for fragile, multiply disabled children. They will be sent home with no funding at all for their families to care for them or get a nurse. And many of these children need 24/7 skilled nursing care and a lot of doctor visits to stay alive. They will die. And they will also, without a doubt, have ER visits and hospitalizations before that happens that amount to far more that the state will be paying than if funding were continued. 100% of all House Republicans voted for this, as well as 12 Democrats in name only, one which is my representative. I am so hideously angry you cannot imagine. And he asked me to please discuss this on air. And this is just, Cossack says, yeah, they're just useless eaters anyway. Yeah. Who is that woman that Overman's been going off about the last couple of nights? He's just, sitting there going, hunger is a great motivator. A 16-year-old kid can get a job at McDonald's, can't they? What happened to a 16-year-old kid being able to actually concentrate on their education so that they can go and get a real job? But here, what I'm getting off of this is just that they refuse to have a state tax increase. And now all of these social services are just going to be completely cut. Completely cut. It's insane. And it's, again, the short-sighted thing. I mean, almost every issue that is just screwing people comes down to short-sightedness. This absolute just disregard for the idea that spending a little now will save you tons later. I mean, just look at the EPA analysis. Okay, cost you 18 cents a day now, but by 2020 it's going to save you much, much more. 30 cents a day. And if we're not going to care for children, especially ones that have, no family ever asks for a disabled child. And to think that they're just going to shut down all these services. Ben also mentioned that, that there's a place where there are, really troubled and violent kids. that are just going to be let out on the street. I bet the local police are going to be really, really happy about that one. You know, and there are troubled people in this world, young and old. It's just amazing. So I've got a word out to Ben. I'd like to actually see if I can get him on the line to discuss this, because he's obviously right in the middle of it. And he'd be able to... Gene's just saying about this woman that Oberman's been ripping on. Let them eat cake. Maybe we'll have to be motivated like the French in Osei 1789. Well put, my friend. Hey, get in on this thing. The number to dial in, because it is on your dime this time, because I don't have the 800 number here. 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. I'd love to hear from you. Love to know what is on your mind. You know, what do you feel about this climate change bill? Are you like me? I wish it was a whole lot better than it is. I hate the fact that there's concessions to bloody King Coal. But we got to start somewhere. You know, I just, and I'm finding myself struggling to say that because, you know, I think that there should just be a complete just like halt on all new coal-fired power plants and just start building wind farms, solar plants, solar geothermal plants. Look, the math was done. If they took just 100 square miles of the Mojave Desert and installed solar geothermal systems, it could run the entire U.S. grid. What do you reckon? Sound like not a bad idea? That's what I reckon. It doesn't sound difficult. It doesn't sound like a bad thing. Ha ha ha. But King Coal won't like it. And they got lots of money. They buy judges in West Virginia. We know this. In fact, the Supreme Court even ruled against them recently, which was a shocker of a decision. And I think it just goes to the argument about, you know, you might have had this discussion with people from time to time on the idea of whether judges should be elected or not. And I don't think that they should be. I think they should be appointed for life, because if they have to run for election, that means that they have to fundraise. And that also means that they'll skew their decisions. And that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. That kind of breaks the whole concept of justice. Thank you. Just had a coffee delivered by my wonderful missus. Being that it's Saturday, she's home. And I feel really bad because I've hijacked her laptop to do the show, but thank you, darling. But, you know, I just seeing this trend of refusing to pay now because of some selfish idea that people have of, you know, we don't have any responsibility to anything or anyone other than our own pocket. Trouble has just sent me which is one of our bloggers, a link, and I've seen this thing before, Susan. Cat walking on my mixer. Hopefully she didn't step on anything, and yeah, okay, nothing's gonna explode. About this power air rotor system, which is basically looks like a big balloon. And it's basically it's a big balloon that creates wind power. You know, up where there's constantly wind. Hey. You can find it at magenn.com. This is obviously the designers of it. And it says, there's enough energy in the high-altitude winds to power civilization 100 times over. And sooner or later, we're going to learn to tap into the power of wind and use it to run civilization, says Ken Calderia, professor of global ecology at the Carnegie Institute of Science. The Megan, I'm guess they're calling it, M-A-G-E-N-N, air rotor system, also known as Mars. Megan Power's high-altitude wind turbine called Mars is a wind power anywhere, trademark, solution with distinct advantages over existing conventional wind turbines and diesel-generating systems, including global deployment, lower costs, better operational performance, and greater environmental advantages. Mars is a lighter-than-air tethered wind turbine that rotates about a horizontal axis in response to wind generating electrical energy. This electrical energy is transferred down the 1,000-foot tether for immediate use, or to a set of batteries for later use, or to power the grid. Helium sustains Mars and allows it to ascend to a higher altitude than traditional wind turbines. Mars captures the energy available in the higher altitude. Mars captures the energy available in the 600 to 1,000 foot low level and nocturnal jet streams that exist almost everywhere. Mars rotation also generates the Magnus effect, which provides additional lift, keeping the Mars stabilized and positions it within a very controlled and restricted location to adhere to FAA transport and Transport Canada guidelines. So this is the stuff that we should be promoting. You know, this is the kind of thing that we need to be putting money into, and not putting money into the furphy, which is clean coal. Furphy is Australian for a lie. Cat across the desk. Bye, Chico. Wow, she ended up not shutting anything off. Maybe she's learning where to walk. It's nice having cats. I love my cats. But when I'm doing the show, oh, they can cause me such stress. And as Trouble says, you know, the high altitude, don't have to worry about the birds or the noise. And let's hear it for Stumble. I love Stumble Upon for that kind of thing. And if you've never tried it, check it out. Go to stumbleupon.com and install the toolbar. It's you basically get to stumble across pages that other people with similar interests have marked as being good. And I've used it plenty of times. If I, you know, am short for stories, you know, go by category and say, I want to talk about this. Stumble, 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 stumble. Oh, I'll have that one, thanks. But, you know, all these things have the potential to actually replace the entire dirty grid that we have. And this is what frustrates me so, is that we have to constantly have this discussion on the jobs level as opposed to the actual science level. Now, the jobs part is part of the discussion. It is part of the discussion. Because new industry will create new jobs. And, you know, as regular listeners to Bob's show here know, the whole argument that Massey and the coal thugs have about, you know, wind power and things, saying, you want to take our jobs away. Well, you know what? There's hardly any jobs that exist with mountaintop removal mining. It's all massive machines run by a skeleton crew. You know? And again, it's that selfish thing of,
don't affect my, I don't care if you're going to create 10 times more jobs, you want to take my job.
And again, it comes down to this thing that my neighbor and I have talked about many times. The United States has this amazing limited capacity for change. You know, land of the free and home of the brave? Sorry. It's the home of the scared. Scared of what's possible. Scared of what could be. I mean, I just do not get the mentality of resisting changes that could actually get you into a cleaner gig. I mean, that's just how I look at it. I think it's barbaric that we still send good men and women, mums and dads, down into deep dark holes so that they can dig out the dirtiest power source on the planet, poison themselves, poison their children. But it gives them a paycheck. This is where the fear comes from. And I understand that, you know, in these shaky economic times that we're in at the moment, that this can be really scary of wanting to, you know, basically turn an industry on its head. But it'll be a good thing. It'll be a good thing. Hi, Chico. She's back. Meow. What do you want? She's like, I want out. Sorry, my headphone cord isn't that long. But, you know, why wouldn't the United States want to lead the world in a new economy? I mean, you know, Why? It makes no sense. It makes no sense. And we're just going to... There are multiple pictures of my cat in the chat room anymore at the moment. It's rather funny. You know, I just really wish that we could flip a switch on people that can't think outside their own, you know, personal space. It's sad. You know, like this Wurzelbacher moron, you know.
I love America.
Well, if you actually love the country, why won't you support things that would help the country? Real simple question there. I ain't Joe and I ain't a plumber. My 5 minutes of fame should have been over long ago. It's incredible. It's just incredible. Now, I'm looking for something here. This was a surprise. I wasn't expecting this. I saw this morning, and it's been posted at the Horn main site. Spectre. Obviously, you know, we know that Arlen Specter is a bit of a political opportunist. And I think he knows that he could have a problem now that he's a Democrat if he doesn't support progressive issues. And he's had a reversal. At a union rally in Washington, D.C. yesterday with Chuck Schumer, Arlen Specter declared his support for a public health insurance option. Further, Specter said that Americans have a right to health care and predicted that health care reform will happen this year. I think Senator Schumer has the right idea about having a public component, Specter said. Okay, this is one of those things where I'll take his political opportunism. Because in a way, it's actually supporting what the people want. You know, healthcare is same as regulating carbon emissions. The American people support it. Our legislators should too. So, I mean, even though I think it's political opportunism, good on Specter for doing so. And I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break here while I connect up a phone call. Because we're going to do that. So, I'm going to connect up a phone call. David from Maine and I are going to have a little bit of a chat again, which is always really good fun. So, here we go. Hang in there for a minute, folks. It's the front porch. We're going to get David from Maine on the line here as we take a little break. A little Soundgarden. Love this band. As you know, I'm so tragic. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid with your guest host, John Fox. We'll see you in a couple of minutes. So, who we got? Welcome to Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, John. Hey. It's Preston in Denver.
Hey, Preston. How are you, mate?
I'm doing all right, man. I just wanted to thank you for mentioning disabled people. You know, people often forgotten in our society. And it would be interesting to hear what, you know, sort of policies the Obama administration might have towards giving them a hand. For instance, they've actually had a movement going on, and they were able to pass that Americans with Disabilities Act a few years ago.
Right.
And it's been helpful. Well, it's been helpful to them.
Yeah, I wish I could kind of get back some stories that Ben sent me yesterday on this issue. And what appears to be is that they've just cut absolutely all funding for, like, all social services in Illinois. And I just, you know, I mean, this affects, you know, troubled kids, kids with disabilities, probably, you know, drug treatment, halfway houses, you know, and I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. And it just really, really shocks me that no one can think, you know, 6 inches outside their, you know, past their own nose to realize that this is going to end up impacting them negatively. I mean, we have these services, you know, for the greater good. I'm sorry if that's a radical concept, but the greater good is important.
It sure is. Definitely. You know, same goes with how we treat, you know, people who may have committed a crime in these prisons that we send them to. Kind of like torture chambers sometimes, rape rooms, you know. We talked about Saddam's rape rooms a lot, but our prison system has very much become like that. And again, there's going to be a blowback if we allow these people to be dehumanized and we turn our backs on them. A lot of the time they're going to come out eventually, and they're going to be brutalized, traumatized people with lost souls and very angry. And with a model of violence all around them, on the TV all the time, and in the movies, in the video games. So,
yeah,
it's a recipe for disaster.
It is, and I just think about, you know, over the years, I've had some involvement with the Special Olympics in different various ways. And, you know, I mean, this is, you know, a bit of a showy thing that deals with kids with, you know, mental and physical disabilities. Not just kids, adults as well. But, you know, I just sit there and think of the human level of it, because just as a personal example, growing up in New Jersey, just around the corner from me, there was a family who had a young Down syndrome boy. And I say young. He was actually only 2 years younger than myself. And both of our mothers had us at that, you know, critical age of around 40 when the risks of having a Down syndrome child, you know, really kind of skyrocket. And I, you know, aside from this boy being just an amazingly beautiful human being, I mean, my exposure to kids with Down syndrome alone, they're like some of the most like caring and emotional and sweet spirits you will ever meet. I think it's set my view on people with disabilities, because, you know, that could have been me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Only by a bit of the luck of the dice, that could have been me. And,
sure.
And you know,
And it may be in the future. I mean, we're going to have aging issues to deal with. And, you know, in some ways, people are becoming disabled after being born via part of our food system. You know, this high-fat, high-sugar stuff and the obesity it's causing and the diabetes. You know, people sometimes have to get, you know, toes amputated because of diabetes and stuff like that. So.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you know, just, you know, the mercury levels, you know, 10% IQ loss. Well, if that's just kind of generally what's happening at the further reaches of the scale?
There are these endocrine disruptors. I don't know if you've heard about those, but I think they come out of plastics or pesticides and disrupt hormonal balances. And I think there's an increase. Well, we see a lot of frogs who are kind of a mixed male and female.
Yeah.
And I think there's a growth in the human population and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, yeah. There was actually just a documentary aired here in Australia, and you might even be able to watch it at the ABC website. And it was all, and I can't remember the title of it, but it was something about living without plastics. And the whole documentary is it talks about how, you know, the disposable culture that we created and all the plastic and how it just doesn't, you know, the stuff doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And the effect that it's having and how they're actually showing where, you know, the fish, the little pellets that, you know, the raw plastic, I forget what they call them.
Yeah. I think like a resin, maybe?
Yeah. The original resin, and they call the pellets, these little pellets something, which is like what every plastic is made from. A certain amount of this stuff gets kind of just lost in transport and whatnot and ends up into the water system, ends up in the oceans. And they were doing some studies, actually, going through and taking tests of water and looking at the ratio of these plastic pellets and how much like ectoplasm and, you know, the most basic food in the water. And in some areas, there's more of this plastic that fish eat because they mistake it for food than actual food left in the water in some areas of the ocean. And then they kind of talk about how this has a rundown effect because then it enters the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up digesting these plastics via the foods that we eat.
We're being dosed.
Yeah, we're being dosed. And there's some...
Assorted corporate atoms almost, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what those little pellets are, but...
And in the documentary, they actually show some of the people that are coming up with alternatives. Plant-based plastics that, like, just dissolve in water.
The whole field of green chemistry. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on there.
Oh, yeah. Some of it's really, really amazing that, you know... I've seen on the web the company, whoever it is that does Sun Chips, beginning next year, all of their chip bags are going to be 100% compostable.
I saw that, actually. You know, and there's also... Within this movement, there's, you know, we always have to be kind of critically minded regarding attempts at greenwashing at times. You know, companies putting forth a green feel but not really being authentic. But I do think that Sun Chips, what they're doing is exactly the right thing to be doing, and I hope they have success.
Yeah, I even, before Gail and I moved up to the Central Coast when we were still living in Sydney, we did a lot of our shopping at a green grocer chain called Harris Market, and it's a family-owned operation. And they actually hire more to tie two subjects together. They hire more disabled people than any other company in Australia. Like as far as ratio of size of the company, you know, and they're really good about labeling all of the produce of country of origin and all that. And used to talk to the folks there saying, you know, since we've done this, we actually see that people buy domestically when they know it's domestic. And they then order accordingly and price accordingly. You know, like asparagus is a great one. He said that they sell three times the volume of asparagus when it's Australian than when it comes from overseas. All depending on the season. So I sent an email because you know their deli and cheese counter and whatnot. They use paper and whatnot. But we used to buy their bulk yogurt and it would come in non-recyclable plastic. And so I sent an email just saying, you know, really like what you people do. You know, it's a great place to shop. All that kind of stuff. You guys seem to be trying to do the right thing in many ways. Why is it that you're, you know, have you looked into other packaging? And I actually got a response back, shock horror. And
oh, good.
I got this response back, and they said that they were working with a company at the moment on a compostable set of plastic containers for the stuff that they package there, because they do you know, yogurts and cheeses and things like that. And they said that they were already in the process, and they said within a year they expected to actually replace all of the recyclable and non-recyclable plastic containers with stuff that is actually compostable. And they said that they were still just running some tests, and they were really honest in the email even and said, and as well, we have stock of packaging that we bought like 2 years ago that we are going to work through because it's a cost issue. Otherwise, we'd have to eat that. And, you know, that's, you know, I can cope with that. I can actually cope with that when they're looking to actually try and find a solution to the issue.
Yeah, yeah. You know, maybe they'll think of some inventive ways to, you know, once they made them, they should utilize them for something and, you know, for their moving their product or for, you know, maybe they can get some of them back. I don't know. Maybe we can recycle some of this stuff at some point. But we have a chain of grocery stores, kind of natural grocers too, called Whole Foods.
Right.
I think it's probably more corporate-y than, what was it, Harrison Market in Australia?
Harris Markets, yeah.
Harris Markets. And they also have been using corn-based, like when you go to the deli to get something, they're moving to corn-based plastics. But I actually suggested to them, I was like, why don't you have like a container you can bring back like you do with a coffee mug? And they said there was some sanitation code
there are issues with that. They'd have to, you know, I would think it would be a similar situation here, that they would have to have a system where they actually took them in and re-sanitized them and then put them back into stock. And so I can kind of see that being a bit of an issue, but the idea of the delis, instead of using all this plastic and, you know, actually using, you know, a couple of sheets, there's another green grocer in Sydney that actually opened up to compete against the Harris that we were going to, that even the plastic inside was your cold cut would be between two sheets of plastic then wrapped in paper, but all of it was compostable, and I believe it would be that corn-based plastic.
Have you had a chance much to travel and maybe go to some of the open air markets in other parts of the world at all, or
not
pretty much farmer?
Not in a long while. I got to say, ever since I've been in Australia, it's pretty much been capital cities, and heading up to Queensland when I've done trips, they're up at the Big Banana. There's a big market up there that I've gone through from time to time, and there are in the outskirts there's more, and actually there is an open market near us on the weekends,
like a farmer's market.
Yeah, that happens in this kind of general markets down at Etalong, which we still kind of have to go and check out. We're new up here and we haven't really gotten into getting around and finding it all. And actually, now that I think about it, over on the far side of this little place called Woi Woi that we live, there's actually a whole business community called Gnostic Corner. And it's been there for years. And there they have an organic green grocer. They have the organic coffee shop. They have the hemp clothes store. And, man, they have some jeans in there that I'm just lusting over. And
cool.
You know, and they sell sandals out of recycled materials and all that kind of thing. And that's actually been going for years before it was trendy. And obviously, they've been able to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And they made it work before it was hip.
Well, here in Denver, we had something called the Green Festival, and it featured a lot of those sorts of places selling hemp clothing and, you know, beautiful stuff. You know, some of it, sadly, is pricey. And, you know, they're just, I don't know, economies of scale and stuff like that aren't working for them. And all sorts of, a lot of stuff.
Well, they have to import the hemp, which is ridiculous. But the trade-off, though, is, and this is education, I think, the hemp jeans that might cost you twice as much as, you know, your bog standard cotton denim will last like forever. I have hemp shirts that I cannot kill. You know, I mean, one of them is getting on, I think, probably almost 10 years old. It's one of the first things Gail ever bought me as a present. And aside from that, the sleeves have kind of stretched a little bit. It's still mm-hmm. got all the color it always had. It's dead solid, and I mean, that's the thing, you know, it's like, okay, oh, it's kind of expensive, but yeah, you know what, it's going to last forever.
Yeah, that's a great point, and in fact, I did end up buying a sweater from that hemp dealer at the Green Festival, but on top of that, just, you name it, a lot of people making art out of, you know, what was trash, and, you know, plastic bags, and all kinds of stuff, fair trade coffee, what else? And then speakers. They had speakers like Amy Goodman spoke there. Who else? Oh, the John Perkins, Confessions of an Economic Hitman guy.
He's
spoke.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and just and also they had like organic farmers from the region come and spoke to the audience, and and Paul Stamets. I don't know if you've heard of that guy, but he's like a world-renowned mushroom scholar. And the function, how they function in ecologies, how they functioned in the past in literature, you know, Alice in Wonderland, that sort of thing. He thinks, he's very optimistic about how they can be utilized to help take a lot of these toxins out of our land and water and air.
Yeah.
In fact, he's worked with the military to take some of his mushrooms, put them in toxic soil, see what they do after a couple of weeks, and they're coming back with some remarkable stuff. It's, you know, there's a lot of spooky, sadistic research going on in our military, but there are these elements, even within our military, who are doing kind of revolutionary work. So,
because there even have to be people within those departments that actually see, you know, the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
And see down the line that they're going to have to deal with something. It is interesting. You talked about people making art and whatnot out of recycled materials. In this documentary that I was talking about, I think it might be called The Age of Plastic. They talk about I think it's in India that there are these like really really successful industries. One of them. All the disposable, you know, different color bloody plastic grocery bags that, you know, I mean, India's got this massive problem, you know, with trash and whatnot. But
yeah.
there's this really successful business where they take all these plastic bags, they clean them up, they sanitize them, and then the local mothers actually weave these really really beautiful handbags and shoes and, you know, actually make, you know, wall art and, you know, little figurines and whatnot.
Great.
And basically they I guess they use, you know, how you use to spin wool with these plastic bags, and they create this raw material, and they use the colors that they come in, and it's like these crazy rainbow hippie bags, and another thing you're talking about, you know, green science and green engineering that's going on. Another thing that they talked about is I think it's a Dutch company, I'm not sure, actually has found a non-genetically modified organism. It's a naturally occurring organism that actually can digest the plastics in the water and actually just turn it all back into real organic material. And okay. They're seeing really, really good signs of, you know, they're really excited about this because it's not something that's genetically modified that could, like, take over other species. But they can introduce, and they go for this as a food source. And what they're seeing is that once that food source is used up, the population just kind of dies away. So it doesn't end up actually taking things over, but it's just naturally occurring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, in the documentary, they had to, like, kind of snapshot in the last 2 minutes about 20 other projects that they mm-hmm. didn't even have time or budget to be able to put into the final edit.
Right. I saw a similar movie. It's called Addicted to Plastic. And
that's it. That's the one.
Okay.
I think that's the one.
Okay. I'm curious. How did you stumble upon it? I'm a member of a kind of a DVD cinema circle that you know, pay like 15, 20 bucks a month for. And they send a collection of like a full-length documentary and then a couple of shorter environmentally related documentaries that have a hard time, you know, getting distributed. So anyway, a recent episode included Addicted to Plastic. And how about you? Did you...
Well, it's the beauty of having, you know, I love my Australian Broadcasting Corporation. The ABC, okay, which is the pub, which is the people's broadcaster, okay, airs these things. You know, a lot of their content comes from the BBC and ITV, and you know, they also air stuff from, you know, from Frontline and whatnot. And this was aired a few weeks ago, but if you go to abc.net.au, they have a thing there called iView, which is similar to the BBC's iPlayer, where, like, all of their content is available for a week or two online. And if it's something, and if it's something that doesn't have a rights deal in your country, you should be able to watch it from the United States.
Interesting.
And so, and so I actually went and watched it in high definition streaming off of the website about a week ago. And I thought it was a fantastic little documentary, and so it, you have seen this thing, and like at the end, you know, there was just kind of like, you know, and these are all the people also doing good things that we didn't even have time to cover.
That's right. You know, I was kind of my attention was drawn elsewhere towards the end, but I kept kind of coming and going in it, and I noticed it was the hopeful stuff going on, but the first 40 minute, was a half hour or so, was about that giant, you know, kind of island of plastic,
yeah,
between California and Hawaii, that's causing such a problem. But approaches to ameliorating this problem that are fun to watch develop for sure.
Yeah, the one that really just I loved was where they showed that packaging and they just kind of ran it under a water tap and it just kind of just dissolved.
It was interesting, all those shellfish that were, like, hopping onto the plastic stuff. And, isn't Adelaide, you know the town Adelaide? Is it,
yeah,
Adelaide? Or?
Yeah, South Australia.
Okay, they've got some, I guess they've got some progressive things going on, although were they affected by that big fire?
They had their own fires and they have real water problems because they're at the very end of the major river system that runs through Australia. So as everybody pulls water from the Murray-Darling system where it actually hits the ocean, they're starting to run dry. A good friend of mine lives there in Adelaide and, you know, it's been getting hotter and hotter there. Over the years, even since I've lived here and since I've known actually Tim Dunlop, who's a blogger, he used to write for a site that I used to run for him called RoadToSerfdom.com. And he got tired of doing the politics thing; it was burning him out. Now he does a music blog for Crikey called Johnny in the Basement. And if you want to have a fun read, go to crikey.com.au, check out the blogs, and look for Johnny in the Basement. It's a
Crikey.
Crikey. C-R-I-C-K-E-Y, I think it is. Crikey.
Okay.
And they've got a bunch of different blogs there, and there's one there called Johnny in the Basement. It's my friend Tim Dunlop, and last summer, he just said it was amazing over the last couple of years how it's just gotten drier and drier and drier, hotter and hotter and hotter. And it like, you know, really unbearable. I mean, we've had a couple of really unbearable summers here. I mean, it just gets worse every year. There's not actually a respite that we've had. There's been no up and down. It's just progressively gotten worse. And it was in Victoria where Black Sunday happened last year. And what they reckon is, and this is where, you know, Australia gets hit first and worst when it comes to climate change. And the big problem that we're going to have now is we had this just catastrophic, the worst bushfires that Australia has ever seen. And, I mean, we keep saying this like every 2 years. You know, we have another event that comes down. And then what's happening is because there's more of this total energy in the atmosphere, you get away from the dry season, they get more rain than usual. So then you get all this new growth and then it goes really hot and dry again, and we just end up having more fresh fuel. And they reckon that it's, we're getting to the point that Australia is just not going to be able to regenerate its forests when, I mean, bushfires are normally part of nature's cycle here. There are certain plants that actually don't produce seed without bushfire.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah.
So there is a certain amount of that of it that needs to go on, but where it's now gotten so hot and dry that it just gets completely out of control. Control burns, you know, just can't do the job, and then we end up with these ridiculous wet points, and it's all just fresh tinderbox, and it goes.
I heard that some people were actually kind of starting to migrate from southern Australia because of this climate threat that they're under and just how uncomfortable it is and fear of some massive fire.
Well, you know, there's people that have been living in some of these, you know, more rural areas of Victoria that, you know, it's now, you know, some of them have lost homes more than once in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is the most arid place on the planet, as far as I know. You know, I mean, this island, for the most part, you know, 98% of Australia lives within, like, you know, a couple of miles of the ocean. The rest of it's, you know, really dry, really hot, and, you know, because of agriculture in the northeast, it's depleting the water that ends up getting to the south, and it's a real problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, Greece also, they've had a lot of huge fires. You know, every part of the world, actually. And here in Colorado, we had the irony of this was, we had a fire, not a huge one, but, you know, still threatening enough that they had to do a big, you know, reverse 911 call to a lot of people living west of Boulder. And like 1,000 or maybe 2,000 people were told they needed to evacuate the area. And among those residents was none other than Michael Brown of Good Job Brownie fame.
All right.
And he's relocated here. And he actually hosts. He's been substitute hosting on the big 50,000 watt right wing station here based in Denver, but reaches like 38 states. And he'd do like 3 hours on a Saturday, and then a couple of weeks later, 3 hours on a Sunday. And I have to be honest, he actually was pretty good. We disagreed on everything, but he would always give progressive people opportunities to say their piece. And so, anyway, he hasn't said anything for a while because the baseball season started, constant baseball. But, you know, I mean, an occasional game, but, geez, hour after hour of, I don't know, maybe I'm getting too cynical or something. But
I got a question for you, Preston, because I have spent some time in Colorado. My brother used to live there years ago, and I only was ever there in the summer, unfortunately. But how has there been a decline in the snowfall in winter that's affecting the skiing industry?
Yeah, good question. I don't know much in terms of numbers. And also, there's been, in some cases, declines, and in other cases, these deluges of snow and then really rapid melt-offs, which has created, you know, other issues. But I saw a guy who's actually in charge of some of the operations for Aspen Ski Resort. I saw him speak here in Denver at a bookstore. He was doing a book signing. He wrote a book called, I think, Getting Green Done, and about his own experiences and trying to make, you know, like heating and cooling systems more efficient. You know, just a lot of simple, you know, 1,001 different approaches to different sorts of issues. And sometimes not requiring any kind of well, just, you know, daylighting, using daylighting more, and, you know, like UPS trucks, instead of having a closed top, have like a sunlight up top, so you don't have to invest in a light bulb and stuff.
Right.
Use the sunlight. What else? So he was talking about the issues. They're very concerned. All the ski resorts are very concerned, and they're trying to be models themselves for, you know, less gases in the air. And some of them have installed solar and wind systems. You know, they're working on transportation issues in their towns.
The Australian ski area, which is a place called like Threadbow and whatnot here in New South Wales, that industry has recently really gotten on the climate change issue because they've been watching their season gradually shrink every year because of the fact that our winters, even if they are getting slightly colder in some places, they're not cold for as long. So the season's getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and it's costing them more and more to manufacture snow. And and what was interesting, Gail and I are big kind of like scavengers, like to try and recycle things that people throw out. And last year when we were going the semi-annual council clear out, you know, where you get to put, you know, big stuff out on out at the street for them to come around with the trucks and, you know, get rid of your old washing machines and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw the year that everyone gave up on skiing here because there were almost every block 6, 8, 10 sets of skis just being thrown out.
Interesting. Wow.
And you know, it's just, you know, Gail, I'm like going, more skis, you know? And I said, you know, if I thought I could sell them, I'd be picking them up and going to eBay. But obviously, people haven't been able to ski for the past couple of years, and they're just going, oh, well, that's over.
Yeah.
It wasn't cheap gear, you know, complete sets of boots, poles, and bags, you know? Everyone going like, I ain't skiing no more. How about you have them, you know? And it just seemed to be, you know, made us think, you know, really, you know, has it actually affected that industry? They're having a fairly good season this season, but it's the first one in quite a while.
Yeah. Well, we also have this issue with pine bark beetles. You mentioned how some of the seasons they're getting shorter.
Right.
And apparently, without the longer, harder winters, colder winters, it doesn't kill as many beetle larvae as it did in the past.
Yeah, that's actually been a really bad trend for quite a few years, hasn't it?
It has, and it's taken out a huge part of the forest that we have in the hills. But again, people are starting to think about, you know, what can we do with the wood? How can we use it constructively, and also how to replant it? I don't know if you caught a conversation I had with Bob a week or so ago, but there's this movie called Taking Root, and it's about Wangari Maathai, who won the Nobel Peace Prize in Kenya. And she had seen just the devastation of a really kind of a Garden of Eden, that's what she called it, in Kenya. And when British colonialism came in, you know, they just chopped down all the trees and, you know, the streams dried up and stuff like that. And but they always had money, though, to supply uniforms and guns. There's always money for that.
Well, yeah, there's I was talking about Bill Hicks, you know, yesterday, and, you know, he used to end his stand-up routine with this thing where he'd say, look, if we would take the money that we spent every year on defense, and, you know, this is back in the 90s, he said, we could feed, clothe, and educate every human on the planet without exception.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and if we did that, we'd be able to explore outer and inner space together forever. And I think it's one of the most beautiful sentiments I've ever heard.
That's great.
And it's true.
Is that on one of his, is it on one of his CDs by chance? I don't know.
If you check Google Video, his two TV specials from the UK are readily available, and they're an hour or better long each. They were completely uncensored, aired in prime time, you know, where he couldn't get get an audience where he couldn't play a place of more than, you know, 50 people here in the United States. He was doing 2,000, 3,000 and larger seat, you know, traditional proscenium arch theaters in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And because he got such acceptance there, the rage factor pulled back, because he got very, very confrontational with his audiences in the United States, just because he just got tired of dealing with fools. In the UK, he found this audience that was educated and aware, that saw what he that the outrage was actually out of a desire for people to being mm-hmm. and actually loving one another. And I know that it's that mm-hmm. it's this crazy hippie concept, you know, it's really mm-hmm. out there.
Yeah, and so is it, you know, the opposite, the people who are working towards dividing us and creating animosity and deceit and stuff and self-deceptions. So I think Hicks's rage was very much towards that, you know, these perception managers of the, you know, corporate elite. And they do very, you know, it's just evil how they manipulate people. I think Jefferson, on the Jefferson Memorial, there's a quote from him about something about his outrage towards those who there's something to do with the mind, liberation of the mind.
Right, right. A few years ago, I did a tour with a musician here in Australia, Ben Lee, and he's
I know of him.
Yeah. And he's I have to say he's been the most pleasant surprise of a live act I've come across in a long time. It was on the tour of that album, A Week Is the New Sleep, and so, you know, it was all that kind of. Yeah.
So,
and, you know, there's the album that had the We're All in This Together, and I remember doing a gig in Canberra at the university. People in the Western world are university students. They've got all the pressure of classes, trying to, you know, keep their heads above water financially while trying to study.
And
it's a little better here. There's a little bit better support for education here, but it's you know. But still, it's the same kind of thing, you know, all this kind of pressure. And Ben's show was really amazing. You know, full production rock show, you know, it's not like it's heavy music or anything, but it's, you know, this kind of really happy, positive music. And at the time it was also, you know, the beginning of the whole Iraq conflict and everything. It was a very tense time in the world. And at the end of the show, the band walks off, and Ben stands there up on stage, and he pulls the feedback buster, which is the stopper you put in an acoustic guitar to keep it from feeding back when you play live and loud. He pulls it out, throws it off at his guitar tech, and I watch the engineer at the front desk go and shut the whole PA down. Like, what are you doing? He goes, shh, just watch. And he then proceeds to play without PA on acoustic guitar this one song, and it's this kind of almost sounds like a little bit of a mantra where it's whatever you do, you can do it. Yes, you can. Go and do it kind of thing. And you could hear a pin drop in the place as everyone just shuts up, and this little guy plays this acoustic thing, sucks everybody in, sends them with this little positive mantra of whatever you do, go and do it. Yes, you can do it. And I watched this whole crowd of what were really stressed out, high-strung uni students walk out looking like they just had their third eye cleaned for the first time in their lives. And it was, and I just sat there and like going, man, you really are something of what this world needs right at this very moment. And I'll never forget it. And every gig, it was the same reaction. And I thought it was just the most, you know, you had this big thing and then suddenly just drew everybody right in. And, you know, he's a little guy. You know, he's not a big presence on stage.
And he was, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
But he was touring, Did you say he has a new album out?
He does have a new album out, which I haven't gotten. I actually haven't picked up yet, and I'll have to correct that problem.
Okay.
But this was a couple of years. This was a few years back.
Okay. I haven't heard his music for years and years, and I remember what I had heard. I think it was his first kind of breakthrough, I guess. A lot of nice love songs for sure, and very well crafted stuff. But yeah, what a great story that, to hear he's doing such great art out there, inspiring.
Oh yeah, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever worked for. In fact, before the tour started, I went out to go and do a little showcase gig with him, like a couple of weeks before the tour started. But it was a way of I knew that I was going to be being systems engineer for a couple of weeks when they actually kicked off the tour. So it was a way of going and kind of like meeting everybody. And, we've already got the venue set up. It was in this neat little nightclub with these amazing kind of tables and lots of cushions and stuff for people to sit on. It was a great, great little place. And actually, Ben, when they're on stage, all the mic stands are just absolutely covered with flowers. It's wild. It's like the most hippie thing you've ever seen. And so we're all kind of set up, and we're waiting for the band to come for sound check. And the band starts wandering in, and Ben comes in, and I haven't had a chance to approach him or anything. And I'm over, I guess, over at the amp rack or something, doing something, and he catches my eye and makes a beeline straight for me with his hand out, looking me right in the eyes. And he says something to the effect of, "Hi, I'm Ben. How are you and who are you and what are you doing for me today?" And it was just like with this big smile, like, "Hi, you're a human being. You're not a worker. You're not excess meat."
Right.
"Hi." And I just was like, wow. How rare have I ever had that? And so I kind of got sold on the guy from that moment on. And their sound guy is an American guy, who came over. And so of course we got on like a house on fire. But that's that's a whole other issue. But yeah, I do believe that music could cure this planet in many ways. Unfortunately, the industry keeps the good stuff from actually getting to the forefront.
Yeah. But there is these kind of alternative distribution points. Certainly I wish it could be on the big mega stations too. We need our own kind of ABC here in the U.S. Although PBS does a lot of good stuff.
Oh, they do. I wish that they kind of had the funding that in a lot more buying of stuff from elsewhere, which is great. I mean, you wouldn't see actually some intelligent English drama if it weren't for PBS.
Recently, inspiring programs on the environment. It's called E Squared, like the letter E and then the number 2.
Yeah.
Narrated by Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt. Sorry. Sorry, Brad. No disrespect. That guy's doing a lot of good work, actually, on top of being a great actor. A friend of mine was raving about The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, I think it is. And apparently, at least what she read into it was maybe a message about not just for peace but for pacifism. I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Nor have I. I've heard reviews of both ends. I've heard some people just pan it, and I've heard other reviews that said it was really, really wonderful. And when I hear kind of things like that, I sometimes wonder if the people that panned it didn't get it.
Okay. I don't know. But a movie that I have seen and that I would highly recommend was that film I began to talk about like 10 minutes ago, but I lost my train of thought or got sidetracked. But no, that's fine. But Taking Root, and I think the website's like Taking Root the Film or takingrootfilm.com. Wangari Maathai, and I'm thinking we need to like recruit her or bring her here to Colorado, and she can tell us about what to do as we kind of we try to revive the mountains again after the pine, you know, the pine bark beetles kill off all these trees. How can we replant, and what should be some of the considerations as we do it? And you know, they're having a lot of fun, actually. Not only are they restoring the forest there, but they're restoring their communities. And, you know, by, and they're empowering themselves by, you know, they can plant this in the ground and feed their families. Whoa, autonomy.
What a concept. I'm at the website here. It says the vision of Wangari Maathai?
I think it's Maathai.
Maathai.
Uh-huh.
It's the people who must save the environment. It is the people who must make their leaders change. We cannot be intimidated, so we must stand up for what we believe in. I can go for that. Another really good film that Gene sent to me, and it's actually in under videos on the Horn front page, is a film called Home, which is absolutely visually just mesmerizing. And it is the whole climate change issue. But they constantly shoot this thing from kind of, like high altitude shots. And, mm-hmm. and you get this just overwhelming sense of how tiny we are in relationship to the planet and its systems. It's kind of like depression level and compelling.
And we are tiny, but you know, kind of in the way bacteria are tiny, you know, to these other organisms that we see. But yet those tiny things have like everything to do with the well-being of the larger being there. So it's total interconnection, you know.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. We've had kind of a war. You know, we've got this, and it's not we, it's the elite that's kind of lost their minds, and they love this dominator narrative. So they war against everything. They war against other peoples. They war against other genders, other sexual orientations. They war against
drugs, the war against,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And why does everything have to be a war?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't. If that's a choice they made, or they've been mesmerized by some forces to make that choice, I don't know. They've been bribed to make it. You know, some people have careers in this, so they collaborate with what they know is wrong.
Yeah.
But because you're desperate for money and stuff, you know, that's part of the system too, to make us desperate for money. But again, rebuilding relationships and relationships with the environment, and we can find, you know, security again. But what were we?
We've kind of danced around a concept here, though, and you know, and even the Bender kind of idea, you know, talking about, yeah, you know, we're small in relationship to the planet. But it's the power of the collective that, mm-hmm. you know, and so if we're constantly dividing things and making things out to be wars and us versus them, as opposed to the idea of everyone coming together, and I know that's radical, I know that's, you know, it's crazy, but everybody coming together to move in a direction.
Are recognizing that we are already together in so many ways, already have these connections, and just learning to respect them, I think, more. But again, you know, war, back to the wars, war on lots of plants, lots of weeds, mm-hmm. you know, the pesticides, herbicides, fungicides,
mm-hmm.
And also war on bacteria. The way they sold antibiotics to this population has been, again, more deceit, creating all sorts of problems for people. But again, if you can create problems, sometimes you create markets. Like if a lot of kids are having diabetes and you've got growth in diabetes, that means increased sales for your diabetes monitor system.
Yeah.
Are people struggling with weight? Increased sales of diet programs. So, you know, there is short-sightedness in a sense, and it does cost us a lot of money in a sense, but for other people who are crafting these policies, they've got kind of a long view. It's very intentional. And where it's costing us money, it's making them money. So they're like, yeah, you know, one person's cost is another person's profit. And these institutions that have taken over our government, they're, you know, it's corporate fundamentalism. You know, increased profits, you know, no other considerations. And so, but I think there can be a progressive capitalism, like we were talking
Absolutely.
About with this green chemistry. I hope those people sell a lot of those bottles. And I came upon this company that has paper totally recycled. And in addition to that, the paper contains little seeds of, like, basil or wildflowers and stuff like that. So if it does get...
That is cool.
Yeah.
That is really neat. So when it composts, it ends up creating new life, which will create more organic material.
Yep.
I mean, that permaculture, I wish, is something that we could actually get people to grab onto in like an industrial scale. The idea of leaving the soil better than you found it, I think, is not a really hard concept to grasp, as opposed to just raping it of all its nutrients to sell it for short-term profit. And like you say, that all the antibiotics, the pesticides, all that, also comes down to industry. If we weren't creating massive swaths of just one crop, I mean, what's going on, I think it's in Borneo, where, like, basically everything's been killed off to plant palm oil.
Right.
They're heading for such an environmental disaster because there's no natural competition going on, and pests will just run rampant, which then ends up being done bringing the pesticides, and we've
killed off the predators, you know, the birds and the amphibians and stuff who ate these other bugs in the past, you know, we exterminated them. You know, we did to them what we did to the buffalo, you know, and others. You know, what we did to the water buffalo in Vietnam, we pretty much, you know, drove them to the brink of extinction. And now currently parts of Iraq used to have a lot of camels. Our Air Force pilots have been, you know,
hey, man,
treating as target practice.
What was it? Weren't some of the most productive olive groves in Iraq at one time? And they're now gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They, you know, a lot of these countries have these incredible systems, their own indigenous food systems and food traditions, clothing traditions. And these, the West warlords, you know, just marches into country after country to demolish those markets and impose their own. And then they call it all under the guise of a free markets.
Well,
that's the biggest lie.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned about predators. In your area of the United States, where they've reintroduced the gray wolves, have had unbelievable great run-on effects. I did about a year ago. I remember doing some reading, and I think there was even one of the environmental series that came through here. They talked about the fact that when they reintroduced the wolves into the national parks, within a couple of years, because they were gone, elk or something had started to run rampant, and so then they overgrazed, which then caused more runoff, which then made it so that there was nothing for the beavers to build dams and all this kind of thing. And so once they reintroduced the wolves, they brought the second level creatures down into more controllable populations, which allowed the beavers then to start being able to create dams, which actually then allowed the river and creek systems to actually start to regenerate, and they started to see all this runoff effect right down the entire life cycle, and species, you know, kind of thing, and it all just started to regenerate because the top level predator was reintroduced into the ecosystem again.
Great. That's a good story for sure.
The people responsible, you know, that were involved in just trying to reintroduce them kind of didn't see that this was going to happen. And they just started to see, you know, like there hadn't been any reeds growing along the creeks in, you know, like decades. And within a couple of years, suddenly, you know, few beavers finally got some stuff to build a dam with. And look, reeds. And then that, you know, that started bringing back, you know, insect life and all the other things that make a biosystem vibrant.
Nice. Some people are talking about kind of restoring, like, the high plains of the U.S., that area, like, you know, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, and getting back to some, you know, wider swaths of, like, native prairie grasses and bringing back big herds of buffalo again and, you know, the gazelles and all the birds, taking down some of the old fences that animals have been getting stuck in, these old barbed wire fences, taking that stuff down and kind of turning it into like an American Serengeti almost. And it would be this international, you know, it'd just be an amazing thing to see. But it also, again, a decent kind of capitalism. It'd bring in a lot of tourist dollars. People from all over the world, you know, would want to check this out. And so, again, we could restore ecosystems and markets and our humanity, you know?
There you go, man. That's the bottom line of it, I think, is just the apathy has totally disconnected us from our humanity.
Apathy and, you know, the way they divert our attention and all kinds of stuff, keep information from us. Like, I learned about this hobby in the U.S.
Yeah.
And, I it's so disrespectful, and I don't know, and there's no consideration for, you know, the role of prairie dogs and ecosystems and stuff. But it's a big business. The gun, they've got special guns that they sell here, the varmint killer and all this stuff. And you just, you know, they don't use the meat. It's just, they just obliterate the animal, and it's really a shame, I think. But anyway,
Preston, I just got. Gene's been sending me links as we've been chatting here.
Okay.
Even though it's not perfect, the climate change bill has passed the House.
Yeah, I think it, like you said, it's something. It's a start.
We can build
it's in the
on
right direction.
It.
Yeah.
You know. just seeing Cossack in the chat room. Change, you can believe in my ass. I know I'm having real problems with some of where Obama's gone, but. You know, I do think that, you know, we got to at least start showing, you know, and part of the rhetoric that Obama was putting out before the election, you know, he kind of touched on clean coal, but really gave more lip service to everything else. I'm kind of hoping that, you know, have this bill in place for a couple of years, show what's actually working, which it will be everything but clean coal, and then re-engineer the funding and the tax breaks and whatever for what's actually showing promise as opposed to clean coal, which I'm sorry, I have no doubt will never actually come to pass, and it'll end up just being a big money pit that tries to suck off the funding that can go to other things. So hope, yeah. But now the big fight comes in the Senate, man. You know that this is just going to get crazy in the Senate. It's just going to get insane.
Yeah, and you know there is some money going to high-speed trains and some to light rail, and, you know, we just, you know, it's, you know, beyond what Obama can do. There's the administration, there's all these economic forces around him, but it's what, you know, people, what they're advocating for, and, you know, are they creating forums for their own advocacy, like internet talk radio, stuff like that?
Absolutely.
Are they utilizing other forums, like Talk of the Nation, you know, NPR, stuff like that? And so, yeah, appreciate, again, that you're holding this conversation while Bob's away.
No worries. It's my pleasure. And Ben's actually just popped up, and I think I'm going to get him online to talk about this thing that's going on in Illinois with the kids.
Okay, great. And before I let you go, I wanted to let you know I actually called the Head On Radio Network's number when I first tried to get in touch with you because I had forgotten what your you know, forgot that you were using the different number. So
yeah, I should announce it a little bit better. And I had that bad habit. Once I get a call in, I don't think to actually put the number out again. So it's 304-574-7811.
And great. And one last thing: are you on Facebook by chance?
No. Being that I play in the web design world, And okay. The information that comes out about Facebook's security and their selling of personal information, I refuse. I do have a MySpace, and it's just it's MySpace.com, Foxed Up, which is the name of my show on Sunday, which is returning this weekend.
Okay, I'll check out MySpace. And, yeah, the Facebook stuff, I have a couple of friends. I'm sure I've got so much information floating out there, I'm surprised my credit cards haven't, like, melted down by now for some reason. Or whatever. But I must say it's been an incredible organizing tool for me.
Oh, and, I think it is. It's just what they do behind the scenes. Hey, man, I think I have Ben coming in on the other line, so I'm...
Great, man.
Take care, Preston. Always great to talk to you, my friend. Have a great
day. Likewise.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. You're with John Fox. Who we got? Hello? Hello? Whoops. Go ahead and ring back in a bit there, Ben. I dropped you somehow. Give us a... There we go. Hey, Mr. Ben Birch. How are you, my friend?
Oh, doing fine. How are you doing?
Ah, I'm glad that we finally got you on. I touched on what's going on there in Illinois.
It's a disaster. Let me outline it for you. Illinois has been in a budget crisis now for a couple of years. Our previous governor Blagojevich, let us just say he was never really very forthright with where money was going and how we were supposed to get it, and even to the point where he would fund things that never were appropriated.
Right.
And so we have a mess. And unfortunately, we've also got, we have a situation in Illinois where there are things that they've actually got to pay for, where they've got no choice but to pay for them. And then the small set of things that nobody's going to force them to actually pay for, and one of those things is social services.
Now,
they tried to get a budget passed that would have funded everything fully, but it required a tax increase.
A tax increase of, like, what are we talking about as far as a tax increase? What do you reckon it would have cost?
We were talking about, I believe, going from our current tax of 5% on income to a tax of 7% on income.
That's nothing when you consider the run-on effects of what it sounds like you're about to have.
Every Republican in... Now, the Senate, Illinois Senate approved it, but every Republican in the House voted against it, along with, I understand, a dozen Democrats in name only, one of which was my local representative here, Keith Farnham. And I've given him a piece of my mind, I have to tell you. So what they've done instead, because they have no other choice, is they've implemented a doomsday budget where in social services are cut. And now they say cut 50%, and you think, oh, well, half of it's still going to be there, until you realize that 50% of the current social services is essentially the maintenance on buildings. It's the keeping the lights on and the pipes from freezing.
Right.
There is almost nothing left for people. And we were already 48th in the nation in terms of social service spending. And now, as of July 1st, we will be 51st in the nation. And the people of Alabama and Mississippi and West Virginia could be proud today, because they are no longer behind Illinois.
That is not the kind of thing that you try and strive for.
No, it really isn't. Local impact. Elgin is a town where we have a lot of poor people. We have a lot of poor immigrants. Laotian, Vietnamese, Mexican. We are at the very periphery of the Chicago area, and anybody that gets pushed out looking for someplace cheap enough to live winds up out here.
Right.
And what's going to close here? Well, they're going to close down REMS, which is the substance abuse program, completely gone. They're going to shut down PADS, which is the homeless program. They are going to cut back the outpatient treatment from Ecker Center by enough that all except that, you know, it's going to be just like 5-10% of the number of people that they were able to serve. They're a local mental health outpatient facility. Where my wife works, Larkin Center, they're cutting, you know, they're going to be so badly cut. They're, for one thing, their adult program, which they've been running now for 20 years, is going to shut. The other programs are, you know, where they have children who need just a severe amount of help. In Illinois, we don't have orphanages for children. Any child who is placeable with fosters gets placed with fosters. And the rest, the ones that aren't placeable, go to a variety of places. If they're medically not placeable, they go to places like Little Angels, where the really brittle, handicapped, medically fragile children go. Actually, they go as children and they remain until they die, basically, sometimes as adults out there. They haven't had a dime from the state, not a dime from the state since March 30th, and they're going to have to shut the facility. It's going to be the end. That is according to at the rally the other day, the director of the place talking to us. Larkin Center, well, you know, what services they have, there won't be really any treatment component left. It's going to be warehousing. Larkin was already on the razor's edge of failing, and I'm not sure how they can keep going. And if they do fail, what's going to happen is all of these children are going to be taken to the DCFS office and dropped off.
This is
there
insane.
Is no place else for them to go.
It's insane, Ben. I mean,
the DCFS is apparently planning to obtain a whole bunch of cots and clear desks out of their offices and keep the children in cots in the offices. If you can believe that.
Nothing surprises me anymore, you know, when it comes to what the short-sightedness. That seems to have been the theme for tonight's show, has just been looking at short-term pocketbook issues over the long-term health of one society. And this just sounds to me like, you know, Illinois is just setting up for an absolute humanitarian disaster when it comes to the weakest and most vulnerable of society. And in there, you talked about that, you know, you're dealing with some of the most troubled kids as well, that small percentage that could actually be violent. So, I mean, you're dealing with even just...
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a program at Larkin Center that deals with sexually reactive and sex offender youth. Generally, these are children who have been raped as children and have turned around and raped other children. And they are going in a room full of cots with hundreds of other children, most of whom have other kinds of problems, in an office where there aren't really enough people to look after them.
Yeah, and no proper supervision, no facilities or resources to deal with them when they get out of hand or have, you know, trouble.
Yeah,
and there
are other facilities around the state. You know, facilities where they've got autistic children, facilities where they've got children with such severe asthma that they cannot possibly be cared for in the home. All of them are going to go home, and all of them are going to go home to die.
The poor families.
All right?
And you know, I mean, wouldn't there even be a loss of tax revenue just in the families that will not be able to, you know, work because now they're going to have to take care of these children?
The costs are going to be just ridiculous. When you consider the difference between what it costs to have a child in what is in a nursing home, which is essentially what like Little Angels is, and what it costs to have a child go home and then have rides to the ER, multiple hospitalizations before then going home again, before finally dying, all of which is going to have to be paid for by the state eventually, because the families can't afford them. You look at the cost of offenders. You know, what's going to happen when these children, some of whom were violent, and that's why they're being taken care of in the social work system. Some of which, you know, were sexual offenders. Some of which were drug offenders. They're going to go right out and offend. And what is going to be the cost to law enforcement?
Yeah.
The cost to the justice system to imprison them, the cost to the public in terms of lives. You know, I mean, some of these kids, you know, in their teenagers, you'd be amazed how strong and dangerous a 14-year-old kid who is off his nut can be. Okay?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there you go. So the people who run the private prisons will end up winning on this.
Well, except I'm wondering how the hell we're going to even pay them. You know, if you look at there are doctors in this state who no longer want to take Medicaid patients from the state, you know, where it's state Medicaid, because the state is like 9 to 12 months behind in paying. And it's been seizing upon, and this, by the way, this also affects places like Little Angels and Larkin Center, because all of their medical expenses get billed through that way.
Right.
And, you know, they're already that far behind in paying, and then DCFS and Medicaid have gone to a fee-for-service model wherein they micromanage every single piece of paperwork you submit to them and deny quite a bit of it. Okay? You know, well, we don't believe this was medically necessary. Deny. Stamp.
I did that just even that response, you know, of it, we decided, you know, we're not doctors, but we've decided that it's not necessary. It's insane. And
it's insane.
I
it's insane. Yeah, it's a human catastrophe here in Illinois, and thousands will die, and thousands will be hurt, and thousands of people will wind up unemployed. The knock-on cost of all the people going on unemployment who were working in these jobs, you know, I mean, your average child care worker, we're talking, you know, the low level in the trenches child care worker who, you know, works in one of these houses, you know, does the, you know, 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. shift watching over the kids, you know, minimum wage and plus a little, okay? It's really not a high paying job, but all these people are going to lose their jobs, and then they're going to go on unemployment, and that's going to cost the state.
Mm. Now, okay. The other night, did you go to some sort of like rally or meeting of
yeah,
about
we had,
this?
Yeah, there have been rallies all over this state. We had a rally at over at Larkin Center. Where all of the Elgin Social Services groups came, and their directors came up and basically gave impact statements about what the heck was going to happen to them. And it's not pretty. It's not pretty. I mean, do you realize that if you are disabled and you need housing in Illinois, there is now a 27-year wait?
Ho-ho!
All right? 27 years. If, you know, and all the senior services are going to get cut. So, you know, there's this donut hole in Medicaid, Medicare, where that you get to a certain point and you're paying for all of your care and all of your prescriptions. And these services help the seniors get over this. And they're going to shut. And when they shut, what's going to happen? Well, these old people are going to have to choose between food and their meds. Which do you suppose it is?
it's always going to be the meds that are going to go.
Yes. They're going to start taking half doses or not taking them at all, and they're going to die.
It's not the first, you know, I mean, that's always what's going to happen. And I mean, this again is just even more argument in support of universal health care. Because
if we had universal health care, half of this problem would go away right now, immediately.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just spot on, gone.
Mm-hmm.
It would end this crisis very, very, very quickly, because most of the issues we are dealing with here are issues of medical care. Okay? And the amount of funding we have in DCFS, you know, DCFS and the other state budgets right now, yes, you can keep the lights on, and you still have the medical care provided some other way, it would be fine.
Yesterday, I think it was, I was saying, you know, I think the healthcare issue is the make or break for Obama and America as a nation. I think, you know, outside of virtually every other economic issue, if you guys don't get this healthcare thing sorted out, it's going to bankrupt the nation. I mean, it already is. What, two-thirds of all bankruptcies are healthcare related, if I'm not mistaken. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, so, if it, you know, this is the big fix, really. You know, get healthcare under control, have a public option that brings the insurance companies that are colluding into reality, and you'll have a healthier population. You'll be able to have the resources and the money to fund all this DFS stuff that you're talking about here, and people would be saving money, saving energy, saving themselves
pain. Oh, my God, yes. And I mean, if you just look at the difference between having people having to wait until they're sick enough to go to the ER and being able to actually go and see a doctor, the cost savings are immense. Absolutely, positively immense. I've gotten in arguments with some right wingers in the last day or two, where their argument is, you know, that somebody else's need is no claim on their labor. And the argument I gave them back is, okay, so my friend, when I find you bleeding out next to the road, I should just walk on past.
And didn't you say to one guy you were having an exchange with on the internet that, ring the fire department and tell them that, you know, if my house is on fire, don't bother showing up?
Yeah, absolutely I did. You know, go get yourself a DNR bracelet. Do not resuscitate, and wear it. Because if you are found not breathing or in dire straits, you know, we ought to just not have a claim on the labor of those poor paramedics or those ambulance drivers or those doctors in the ER. I think that those people should just say, fine, you know, don't try to help me because I don't believe in it. The truth is, they're liars.
Yeah.
If it was their child along the road, They would want to come and shoot you if you walked past and let the kid die.
Absolutely.
If it was their wife, ditto. They don't really believe this. They just want it for themselves and not for anybody else, and they don't want to pay for it.
And selfishness is a disease at this point.
Yes.
So much of this, you know, comes down to just being absolutely selfish. Like I said, you know, it's this short term. You know, you want to raise my taxes to do all this, and it's like, yeah, but you know, you pay little now, it's going to save you a whole hell of a lot down the road. I mean, it's the same thing with the climate bill, which, you know, as flawed as it might be, is at least getting somewhere. I could be all purist about it and say, you know, throw it all out because it ain't perfect, but I'm just not going to say that because we're finally actually getting off the starting line and getting somewhere at all.
Yeah, it some place is better than no place, but we, you know, right now in Illinois, they might as well have just cut 100% of the socialists. Isn't really worth saving.
Right, because it's just basically keeping the lights on and the buildings open, but the function that they provided doesn't exist anymore.
And here's the other short-sighted thing. The thing that is to my mind the greatest tragedy. You know, I help a lot of these local groups fundraise. You know, I work registration at their events, and I hand out flyers. I do all kinds of other stuff for them.
Right.
The amount of money, the charitable money that comes into places like Little Angels, like Larkin Center, like PADS, is a lot of money. If the state had to cover that much money additional to get the job done that is now being done by these organizations, the social service budget would have to be three times larger. And I'm here to tell you right now that a lot of these groups, if they shut down, will not be back. They will file the nonprofit equivalent of bankruptcy, and they will be gone. And so when sense prevails in a month or in 2 months or in 3 months, and the budget is restored to, you know, maybe only 5 or 6% less than it was, because, you know, they've been nickel and diming it down for years.
Yeah.
These groups will not be there. Those charitable funds will be gone. They will have gone somewhere else to do something else. You know? And the donors will have such a bad taste in their mouths that even those groups that are able to start back up again, like Catholic Charities, aren't going to be getting the donations because the donors will say, oh, you know, I gave you money, it doesn't seem to have helped. They're going to be gone, and there will be millions and millions of extra dollars that are going to have to be spent to provide the same level of service we're getting now.
Do you have a rough guesstimate of how many children this would affect? Just a number?
No, I don't. Not in number, but I can tell you it is probably, just based on the size of this community and some of the facilities I know about, like Maryville City of Youth and Little City and Lamb's Farm and the number of patients they have, we're probably talking upwards of 30,000.
Holy crap, Ben! Now, is there anything that the audience can do?
If you live in Illinois, write your senator. Write your state senator, write your state representative, write the governor, call them, fax them. If you're not in Illinois, pick somebody that voted against the tax increase. You can find that information online. Call them and pretend to be from Illinois.
Or if you have a family member in Illinois that doesn't listen to this network, write them and get them.
Yes. Because there is really nothing else. There is no way that the charitable contributions can be brought up enough in the current environment. They were already down to cover the difference. So, you know, giving money is, you know, going to be a nice gesture, but it's not going to really help at this point because the loss is so great. The thing to do is to apply pressure, is to blog this everywhere. Go everywhere you are, every message board you are on. If you're on DU, post on DU. If you're on some other board, if you're on Coast, post there. Let everybody know that the state of Illinois is about to commit a human atrocity that is of a scope that you normally see only in war.
Absolutely, Ben. Man, thanks for ringing in. I couldn't have done this justice, and I really, really did want to hear from you. And earlier in the program, I sent a shout out to the anonymous donor that dumped a really, really nice bit of cash on you last night. And the appreciation for the fact that, you know, we wouldn't be able to do it if it weren't for people like me.
Absolutely. Well, none of this, you know, we're facing loss of one of our incomes here from this crisis too. So none of this can go on unless people help.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for everything that you do for us and the hard work. And, you know, we'll hopefully get some action out of people contacting the legislators in Illinois and see if maybe we can get some sort of emergency change, you know, over there. Because, I mean, this
all they have to do is decide to go and vote for a small tax increase. That is all that has to be done. And I'm sorry that the trouble is that Illinois is basically two different states. There are the counties that surround Chicago, and there's the entire rest of the state. And the entire rest of the state is about as right-wing and knuckle-dragging as any of the southern states you'd ever name.
Best of luck, Ben, and let's hope that something happens before all hell breaks loose. Because I mean, you know, 30,000 kids, even just as a rough estimate that you can even think of, is it's an absolute tragedy.
It is an absolute tragedy, and it's not just the kids; it's the adults who need substance abuse help. It's the adults who need housing help. It's the seniors who need help with their medications or nurse visits. Nurse visits are going away too.
Yeah. All right, Ben.
People are going to die. You take care.
All right, man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Bye-bye.
That was our mate Ben Burke. So if you're in Illinois or have family members in Illinois, get on to these legislators and say, hey, look, 2%, it's going to save you tons in the long run, and how dare you leave children out in the cold like this. And with that, we're going to have to finish it up for the week. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with me as I covered for Bob Kincaid. He'll be back on Monday. And Foxed Up returns Sunday, 9 to midnight Eastern time. Hope you'll come in and join me for that. We'll get back to doing lots of music and environmental stuff, and hopefully between now and then I'll be able to actually have a look at the climate change legislation and have a little bit better opinion of actually what is in there. But, thanks to Ben Birch, who was just on, for the streaming, the archives, everything that he does. Thanks to all the bloggers and the mods for everything that they do. Thank you to my news ninjas. Couldn't have done this week without you all. This has been an absolute ball. And as always, RMR, it's all for you.